Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, helping transform crowded, dated, or inefficient kitchens into more functional spaces for daily life. Details at callmosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Alzheimer's disease affects more than 6 million people in the U.S., and new research suggests that the number of Americans who develop dementia each year will double by the year 2060 to about 1 million new cases annually. In the not far past, diagnosing the disorder was an expensive, painful process. But in 2020, the arrival of a blood test that's less costly and less invasive made detection of Alzheimer's disease easier. Further developments of that test have also contributed significantly to our understanding of the disorder, from diagnosis to prevention to treatment. Dr. David Holtzman is a WashU medicine professor and co-founder of C2 Diagnostics. He and his colleague, Dr. Randall Bateman, will receive the American Innovator Award for their work to advance Alzheimer's disease research from the Bayh-Dole Coalition in Washington, D.C. on June 3rd. And Dr. Holtzman joins us now. Welcome to St. Louis on the Air, and congratulations on the award.
Thank you so much.
First, how does it feel to be recognized for this work?
It feels very rewarding in the sense that we really do need better ways to diagnose Alzheimer's disease in a more facile way that allows people to get the appropriate treatments and diagnosis as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. So this is your work, but there had to have been a starting point. What was it that interested you in Alzheimer's disease specifically?
Me personally, I became very interested in it back when I was in medical school, when in the early 1980s, we were being taught about different nervous system diseases, including Alzheimer's disease. And what became clear is that so little was understood about it, yet it was one of the most important health problems that we were beginning to face.
Mm-hmm. What was known at that time that made you curious about what more there was to learn?
Most of the diseases that affect the brain as we get older, so-called neurodegenerative diseases, they affect specific brain regions, some diseases, some areas, some other areas. And in this case, we started to realize by that time that there were particular regions of the brain that were selectively vulnerable. And some of the pathology that underlies that change had been described many years ago. But what molecules and really were leading to that change wasn't understood. So it became very difficult to try to develop any kind of treatments unless you really understand the molecular and cellular basis of the cause of the disease.
Mm-hmm. So from the time you were in medical school, you know, through now, obviously there's the developments that you and your team have been able to innovate on. Were there certain points at which it seemed like there was a significant breakthrough that did lead to greater awareness of what Alzheimer's is and the consequences of it?
What started happening in the late 1980s, early 1990s, is we knew already that Alzheimer's disease, in addition to age being a major risk factor, that genetics played an important role. And some of the genes that were leading to an increased risk began to be discovered. Once that occurred, we could then try to understand what's the basis for how those genes are leading to disease. And a lot of the discoveries that emerged after that have come because of understanding of the connection between the genetics, the underlying pathology, and then what's leading to the disease.
Mm-hmm. What you've developed with your team is a blood test, and it is called Precivity AD, and there are two versions that you've engineered. So this blood test that you developed at C2N Diagnostics, what were the options available before that was released?
Yeah, so just to be clear, when my colleague Randy Bateman and I co-founded C2N Diagnostics in 2007, Randy and I had been working on a new technology to measure proteins that were being made in the brain. And we realized after that development that one of the uses of that technology might be in the future to develop both spinal fluid as well as blood-based tests for the disease. So subsequent to that, Randy had been training in my lab, but then he became independent. And his lab really ultimately discovered the blood-based biomarkers that we're talking about now. My lab contributed by making some reagents that were helpful, but his lab discovered that part. And I think the second part of the main question you asked was, what did it allow us to do once it was developed? So we know there are certain characteristic underlying brain changes that we know are present in Alzheimer's disease, but we weren't able to detect them until the last 20 years or so, other than when somebody came to autopsy. So when we saw a patient, we couldn't be sure that whatever their cognitive problem was due to Alzheimer's disease or another cause of decline. And what these tests have allowed us to do is to really say, okay, if somebody has impairment, is there impairment due to underlying Alzheimer's disease or another disease? And this has greatly facilitated that by being able to have, especially a non-invasive test like a blood test to utilize.
So what were or are the invasive tests for Alzheimer's then?
Yeah. So right now there are some other tests. One is a PET scan that can detect some of the pathology like amyloid plaques or tau tangles in the brain. Those are not overly invasive, but they do require radioactivity, and they're pretty expensive.
Mm-hmm.
At least, even though insurance will often cover them, they can cost anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 a test. There's spinal fluid tests. Some people might think of those as invasive. They're not overly invasive, but still people would rather not have to undergo a spinal tap unless they need to.
Sure.
And there's ways that one can diagnose these pathologies with those tests as well.
Mm-hmm.
But a blood test, as long as it's accurate, would obviously be a much easier way, and now is a much easier way to see what the underlying changes are in the brain.
Mm-hmm. Now, a description of the test states that rather than serving as a standalone tool, you just talked about things working together, the results are meant to enhance the accuracy of a clinical diagnosis by distinguishing Alzheimer's dementia from memory loss caused by other conditions. Why is that something that's important to know, Doctor?
Well, one of the most important reasons to know now is there are two FDA-approved treatments for Alzheimer's disease. And the only way that you can qualify to receive those treatments is if you are proven to have amyloid, one of the pathologies of Alzheimer's, in the brain. And so the blood tests that are now been developed allow you to determine whether or not amyloid is in the brain or not.
Mm-hmm.
And with that knowledge, one could potentially then get treated with one of the new disease-modifying therapies.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking today with WashU Medicine Professor Dr. David Holtzman. As the co-founder of C2N Diagnostics, Dr. Holtzman and his team developed the first clinically available blood test for Alzheimer's disease. For that discovery, he and his colleague Dr. Randall Bateman will receive the American Innovator Award from the Bayh-Dole Coalition in Washington, D.C. next week. So in simple terms, Doctor, how does this test work?
So what is done is blood is drawn, and then there are two different markers of amyloid pathology in the brain of a person that are detected with the tests. One measures a component of the amyloid plaques called amyloid beta, and the other measurement is of a form of the tau protein, which is linked to the amyloid deposition or buildup in the brain. And though in this particular test that was developed initially at Washington University and then C2N has sort of perfected it for commercial use, they use a very fancy machine called a mass spectrometer. And basically it's a scale. And it can measure these proteins with very high accuracy, much more so than other methodologies that are used to measure proteins. And so these tests now, the accuracy for determining whether there's amyloid in the brain is equivalent to that by obtaining spinal fluid or a PET scan.
Mm-hmm. Can this test detect Alzheimer's before symptoms even start?
Yeah. So that's probably the most important finding that's been made with this blood test and other blood tests as well. Namely, we know from other studies that have been done over the last many years that the underlying changes of Alzheimer's disease begin about 20 years prior to when somebody's symptoms develop. And this blood test, the current one, can detect those changes up to 20 years before symptoms will emerge. And so in the longer run, while we don't have preventions for delaying the onset of disease yet, once there are preventions, and I can talk about that in a moment, then the use of this test should become very widespread, because you'd want to know, are you developing these changes when you would then do something about it, like take a particular treatment?
Mm-hmm.
And there are currently two huge trials going on where treatments are being given to people who, based on tests like this, we know they have amyloid in the brain and they're still normal people. And if those treatments in trials work, which will read out in the next 2 to 3 years, then I would imagine it will be indicated for people when they get to a certain age to get this kind of test so that they could decide, oh, it's negative, I'll go on and get retested in 5 more years. Or if it's positive, then they would potentially go on a treatment to try to delay the onset or prevent the disease.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned genetics before, and if someone knows that there has been Alzheimer's in their family, mm-hmm. you know, is there something that consumers, you know, should know about this test? Like, is it something that they can, that people can request?
Mm-hmm. So the most important genetic risk factor for Alzheimer's disease is a gene called APOE. There's three common flavors of that gene. One's called APOE2, APOE3, and APOE4. The APOE4 form of the gene is a very strong risk factor for the disease. If you have one copy of that gene, you're about 3 to 4-fold more likely to get Alzheimer's. If you have two copies, about 12 to 14 times more likely. The issue, though, is that people can get testing in different ways for that gene, but it doesn't mean if you have the different risk factor gene that you are developing the pathology at any given time unless you get tested for whether you have the pathology. So some people want to know that information and they obtain it, I personally don't recommend getting it unless for the purposes of determining whether you need treatment, because there's nothing yet that is approved that we can do to treat you if you just based on your APOE status.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The long-term impact of this test, what do you see that being?
The long-term impact is early detection so that we can really delay or prevent the disease.
And what does that allow patients and their families?
So I think, again, in the long run, when there are treatments that can delay the disease, I kind of think of it like measuring in the blood cholesterol. If your LDL cholesterol is high or total cholesterol is high at some point in your life, then you're monitored and you go on some sort of you have an intervention done. Either you change your lifestyle, you go on a statin to lower your cholesterol. I would imagine the same kind of thing for this kind of test. If you are shown to be developing Alzheimer-type changes and there's something to do about it, then this would tell you that to make those changes and go on a particular treatment that is shown to be valid.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Holtzman, you're receiving the American Innovator Award from the Bayh-Dole Coalition, and that aims to give policymakers, the media, and the general public a better appreciation for the Bayh-Dole system. What is that system, and how has it affected your research over the years?
So the it's actually the Bayh-Dole coalition. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was a bipartisan bill that was passed in Congress, and it has made a huge impact on allowing discoveries that are made at universities, nonprofits, small businesses to commercialize findings that could be helpful to people. So, for example, in this case, we had this finding that could potentially be useful, but unless it was commercialized by the university, like licensing the patents that were obtained, it would never be developed into a widespread test because you need to do so many things in order to get things available, whether it be get approved by the FDA, get approved by CMS for coverage. All these things are way beyond what one normally would do at a university. So by allowing commercialization of new findings, this allows things to get to patients. And it also allows a big financial advantage for the whole system. You employ more people. You know, overall, you really stimulate the economy by getting things available and commercialized so that they're utilized. Mm-hmm.
So what are the biggest questions now moving forward with this research?
Well, so from the type of tests that we developed, I think right now what's commercially available are tests that determine one particular type of pathology in the brain, all amyloid. But there are many other pathologies that we would like to be able to detect that also are involved in Alzheimer's disease, like this neurofibrillary tangles or tau accumulation that we need a better test for. It looks like we might have one available soon. We also would like to detect the other brain disease pathologies that occur in other brain diseases that are common, whether they be things like Parkinson's disease, frontotemporal dementia, other diseases that are also important. And then the other big breakthroughs that will hopefully occur soon are ways to better treat the disease. The currently approved treatments for Alzheimer's disease in people that are mildly impaired will slow the disease down by about 30%, but they're not stopping the disease and they're not making you better. And I think there are definitely breakthroughs that will allow us in the future to both delay and prevent the disease as well as treat the disease in a more effective way. Mm-hmm. So I think those are ways that things that will probably happen in the next few years.
When you and Dr. Bateman receive the American Innovator Award in Washington, D.C. next week, you'll also be participating in a congressional briefing and advocacy conference. What are your expectations for that? You know, is there something that you hope will come of it?
I think for Congress and the American public to realize how important it is that universities be able to commercialize inventions that they have so that this can be made available for the public. I think that's probably the most important message. And I hope that regardless of the administration that's in power, that this will be continued to be promoted.
Mm-hmm. Especially with the numbers, given how many people are projected to be diagnosed. Dr. David Holtzman, congratulations. Dr. Holtzman is a professor of neurology at Washington University, co-founder of C2N Diagnostics, and director of the Knight Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. Have a great time in D.C.
Thanks so much.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
Hi, I'm Laura Hamden, and my colleague Jessica Rogan and I are your daily hosts of the Gateway Newsletter. We meet with the editors in the STLPR newsroom every weekday to bring you the top local stories of the day in a quick and easy 6-minute read by 6 a.m. In an age of overwhelm, it's a refreshing, thoughtful take on the news day, if we do say so ourselves. Fine-tune your daily news habit with the Gateway newsletter. Subscribe at stlpr.org/gateway.